This morning we'll be reading from Psalm 119, 41 through 51. That's on page 533 in our pew Bibles. Let the steadfast love come to me, O Lord, the salvation according to thy promise. Then shall I have an answer for those who taunt me, for I trust in thy word. And take not the word of truth utterly out of my mouth, for my hope is in thy ordinances. I will keep the law continually, forever and forever. And I shall walk at liberty, for I have sought thy precepts. I will also speak of the testimonies before kings, and shall not be put to shame. For I find my delight in thy commandments, which I love. I revere thy commandments, which I love, and I will meditate on thy statutes. Remember thy word to thy servant, in which thou hast made me hope. This is my comfort in my affliction, that thy promises gives me life. Godless men utterly deride me, but I do not turn away from thy law.
Trying to decide on which side to stand. Over there I'm liable to knock over a microphone, and that might wake you up when it hits the floor. I guess the title of today's reflection might seem a little strange. Actually, as I said to some folks the other night, if we had the proper punctuation that came with the sign, there would have been a question mark on the sign, just like in the bulletin. But do you ever feel blitzed? Now, I know that that word has different meanings for different folks. Some of them not always all that great, being blitzed. Fraternities talk about folks being blitzed sometimes. But if you go to the dictionary and you look up the word blitz, or you look up the past tense, blitzed, you will find that it has to do with a swift and overwhelming air assault or attack from the air. In World War II, the Germans talked about the Blitzkrieg, and that was that air assault with their airplanes. So what does that have to do with us today? Air assaults. Now that's not aerosol, that's air assaults. Or with the passage under consideration. Well, some weeks ago, I heard a report on our being blitzed, on the air assault that takes place today. A report on news about cell phones and texting and tweeting, which I don't do. I text. I don't tweet. As well as other electronic media. It's kind of interesting. The average teenager today sends and or receives 3,400 text messages a month. I mentioned that to someone the other day, and they said, "Oh, my child's way beyond average." But the average sends and receives 3,400 text messages a month. The average teenager today, and college students probably do this even more, the average teenager today spends 7.5 hours a day surrounded by electronic media, television, computers, other electronic media, including cell phones and smartphones and iPads and games, computer games. Cell phones are left on 24/7. Of course, mine is, because somebody's liable to call. But then again, that's why they're left on, right? They're left on 24/7 so that folks don't miss a text, a tweet, or a call in the middle of the night. Part of the report said that a lot of folks in high school as well as in college are sleep deprived, and one of the primary reasons is people do send texts and tweets in the middle of the night. I know I got one the other night, and I bleary-eyed picked I picked up the phone, not with my eyes, with my hand, and looked at it through bleary eyes, and then did like, and it was a telemarketing phone or a telemarketing text at 3:35 in the morning. I was not very happy, but then again, they weren't caring whether they made me happy or not. But we are bombarded, all of us, not just teenagers and college students, but all of us are bombarded every day with commercials, and especially these days with political ads. One of the reasons I can't wait for early November to arrive is so that the political ads will disappear and we'll finally get back to actually having 20 minutes of a television show with 10 minutes of commercials instead of 12 minutes of the TV show with 18 minutes of commercials and political ads. But we are bombarded constantly. In many households, it would not be uncommon these days. And we'll take the old average household, mother, father, and two kids. But it would not be uncommon in many households to find mom on the computer or the smartphone, dad on the internet or watching TV, one child on Facebook while another child watches videos or plays video games, all in the same room at the same time. And we do know of folks, I could name them, and we do know of folks that sit in the same back seat of the car texting to each other instead of talking. So I think that we are being blitzed. An air assault. Because all this stuff comes through the air, right? We've got Wi-Fi and all this kind of stuff. I don't want one of those smartphones that's so much smarter than me. The one I've got's already smarter than I am. We think we're connected. And I already talked about that Jimmy Buffett song one time, a long time ago, so I'm not going to. Yeah, so connected and all alone. From the pizza boy to socialites, we all salute the satellites. But we think we're connected when, quite frankly, the average person today, and especially the average teenage or college student, is not all that connected. Not really, because that connection should be, and in the past, meant relationship. And on top of that, we go to the internet, we go to cell phones, we go to tweets, and people get bullied all the time too, right? And we don't even have our fights with fists like we did when I was growing up, or wrestling like we did when I was growing up. We just go ahead and fight over the phone. Bully over the internet. So yes, we are being blitzed. Another report that I heard recently is about how so many folks these days do not know how to stand face to face and carry on a conversation. And I will say, yesterday we were, after we went to the funeral, we were at the mall and we were in Sears and looking for something and went to talk to the salesperson, and the entire time the salesperson was there. He would glance up occasionally, but he would be talking with us and we'd be trying to talk, and he was doing stuff on his iPhone. We're being bombarded. Not so much with bombs, but with bands and multimedia in all kinds of ways. And sometimes we get taunted when we push back. And yes, sometimes we even do the taunting. I'm guilty sometimes about that. So the question is, how can you and I, how can we survive this blitzkrieg that comes our way and return to really finding a deeper relationship, first of all with God, but just as importantly with each other? With each other. I will say one other aside. I'm constantly amazed at I met my match on ChristianMingle.com. God's match for me. I didn't know God used the internet, but I guess now He does. And I heard recently, it was an astounding number. One out of every five new relationships begins with online dating and through online dating sites. Boy, the world's changed. And it just keeps changing. So how do we survive those changes? Some of us are dinosaur enough not to necessarily keep up with all of it, but we have to find grounding within the system. Now, Psalm 119, as Chris mentioned earlier, is a very long poem. It would take us the entire time that I would have up here to read through it. 176 verses. Boy, you'd never get through if you made that a praise chorus, would you? 176 verses. But it really is a love poem as well. A love poem by the psalmist to God, about God, but interestingly enough, about the law. About the law. Now, wait a minute. How can you be in love with the law? Yes, rules may be necessary for some things, but we often keep them grudgingly, do we not? And if the law is seen as giving us rules, or better, I would say, guidelines on how to live and how to live successfully. That doesn't mean we're going to be a multimillionaire or a billionaire, but how to have a successful life. As one writer put it, it's really interesting because no one writes love poems about the federal drug abuse statute laws or the IRS, do they? I certainly wouldn't, especially the IRS, right? We don't think about those statutes and those laws with a series of or seriousness about love, and yet here is a love poem about the law that says over and over again, I love your law. I love your statutes. Law, the word Torah, here means instruction. In fact, one of the major understandings of the word in Hebrew, Torah, is instruction. Not rigid law, but instructions, an instruction manual on how to have proper relationships with God and with others in the world. And while life is filled with enemies and pain and uncertainty, while life as a human being is oftentimes in our world filled with assaults on our personhood, the psalmist here says that God gives us a reliable guide for living. A guide which, for the psalmist, gives true freedom. Not enslavement. Oftentimes we think of laws as enslaving us. The psalmist sees God's instruction not as something that is so old and codified that it becomes like a religious straitjacket. Rather, he sees it as giving us a sense of freedom and understanding, a greater understanding of the world and how to function within it, rather than against the things that God has placed here. The psalmist has learned over time and has come to appreciate God's wisdom in the law. Wisdom which can help protect the psalmist from doing wrong, can make our lives new. But wait a minute, I thought Jesus does that. Yes, but if you go back and you look at the teachings of Jesus in the New Testament, the vast majority of Jesus' teachings have their foundation in the law or the prophets. And then he expounds upon them and expands them as we prepare ourselves to have relationship. And the law can give us ultimate direction. In this passage, the psalmist begins by asking God to deliver him through the law, to give him deliverance. And also, not to take God's truth from His mouth. If we read again here at the beginning, let your steadfast love come to me, O Lord, your salvation according to your promise. Then I shall have an answer for those who taunt me, for I trust in your word. Do not take the word of truth utterly out of my mouth, for my hope is in your ordinances. Here for the psalmist, and in the Hebrew understanding, this truth and not taking the truth from the mouth is seen as recounting the covenant commitment. One of the ways that we keep the law and we learn from the law and we find our guidance in the law. And I'm not just talking about Torah, though for the psalmist that was a major part of what he meant, but the entire collection of writings is to recount that covenant commitment both through meditating on it and through corporate liturgy, coming together and sharing in worship together in the various ways that we do. Liturgy was extremely important within Judaism because it helped to guide and to ground worship into something that was more than just what happened at synagogue or temple, but what was to give guidance for the day after Sabbath and the day after that, and so on. By spending time and energy in these things, that is, meditation on the Scriptures and worship together, the psalmist is able to answer properly those who taunt him. Now, I know this isn't relevant today. This is just old dead stuff. We don't receive any taunts as Christians today or as people of religion. Nobody makes fun of us. Nobody asks us hard questions, right? If I could speak tongue in cheek, you probably wouldn't be able to understand me because I'd be muddling my words or bite my tongue, one of the two. But it does have that relevance because we do have folks who taunt us, sometimes irreligiously, sometimes from other religious traditions, sometimes even from our own tradition, and sometimes we give it back. But he says by spending this time and energy, we're able to answer those questions and those taunts. I'm continuously telling folks, and for years have told college students as I teach, that the answer to the question, well, the preacher said, ... or, well, grandma believed, ... those are not adequate answers to many questions or taunts we receive. In fact, oftentimes they just get laughter or more taunts. Rather, we must come to know what we believe by preparing ourselves through study, through meditation, even through discussion with others, and through prayer. The psalmist confesses his love for the law, but also his hope in the law of God here. And then he confesses his commitment to, and I quote from him, "Obey your law forever and ever." Literally, to the end of life. It's not something that we arrive at some point in time, then we can just sit back and say, okay, well, I knew it once. That's good enough. Our lives change. Our situations in life change. From young to a little bit older than young, even to old young, and all points in between. Our lives change. Our situations change. And that calls for us to continually be meditating and discussing and studying to prepare ourselves all the way to the end of our lives. He goes on to talk about obedience to the law. And obedience includes calls to study and gather for worship regularly, which allow us to walk about in freedom. Literally, to walk about in freedom here means to walk in a wide space, or to walk unconfined by affliction. Or I would suggest to be able to walk around even surviving the blitzkrieg. To have that freedom to walk around, that is, to live our lives in such a fashion. But how can we do this? Why are we able to do this? The psalmist says that we can't unless we, quote, seek out your precepts. Seek out your precepts, he says. I will seek out. Another commitment, in addition to seeking, is to speak your statutes. I will speak your statutes to kings, and I will not be put to shame. You know, a lot of times we don't speak up because we're afraid that we might either be put to shame, or even worse, I would suggest, is that that we are put to shame because we haven't studied, we haven't built that relationship, we haven't found that delight in the law of God, the statutes of God, and so we're ashamed that we can't give a better answer than, well, you know, the preacher said. So just because I said it doesn't necessarily make it so. Bobby's glad for that. We will share God's expectations and God's grace with others regardless of who we are. That's a commitment we're making. And regardless of who they are. And if we live those commitments, we will not only not be put to shame, but we will not bring shame upon God because we don't know what we believe or why. He speaks here about delighting in the commandments which I love. In fact, several places here, twice in this passage, but numerous places throughout Psalm 119, the psalmist talks about loving and delighting in God's law. By the way, the word here for delight in Hebrew is the word Eden. The Garden of Eden, that place that was meant to give life and relationship with God, was the Garden of Delight. The psalmist says, in studying and in living your law, I find my Garden of Eden. I find my delight. In other words, I find the things that provide life. Not just existence. We can exist in a lot of different ways. We can make it through a lot of things just to get through them. But how often do we actually live through the difficulty? There's a difference in living through the difficulty and merely surviving. And the psalmist says, here, we have a way to live through those difficulties. We have a way to make it through the blitz. He says, in fact, I will revere your commandments which I love. The word for revere and reverence here is the same word for awe and fear of God. To look at God's statutes and commands, to look at the law, to look at those relationships with God and with others, with awe. You know, people say, oh, it's awesome. Well, yeah, that's how we're supposed to look at that. I guess the question that comes to mind, two questions. Do you really love the commandments of God? And next question, if you do, do you really love them enough to really be faithful and do them? Because it's not just enough to know them. There must be some doing. See, faith and works is even found in the Old Testament, folks, not just in the letter of James. Or the writings of Paul. Or the teachings of Jesus. And I will meditate on your statutes. And what happens, verses 49 through 51. Remember your word to your servant in which you have made me hope. This is my comfort when I'm being blitzed. Well, that's not exactly what it says in my distress, but that's what it means. That your promise gives me life. The arrogant utterly deride me, but I do not turn away from your law. Living that commitment, finding delight in meditating and praying and studying and discussing the law. God's Word gives hope in times when we feel hopeless, or prepares us with hope so that when those times come, we're ready. God's grace and God's teaching, God's instruction gives us comfort. It preserves our lives, as the psalmist says here. And then he commits once again, therefore I will not turn away. You feel blitzed these days? I certainly do. How do we overcome being blitzed? By taking some time, expending some energy and some effort in meditation. It takes effort to meditate. Most of us got to have something going on, right? A lot of folks can't even go to sleep without the TV going. They set that little timer on the tube so that it goes off later. It takes time, it takes energy, it takes effort in reading and studying and meditating. on the instructions of God, in praying and in coming together for worship with others who have been meditating and who also feel blitzed but have found within God's instructions the promise of life. Promises that can help center us and prepare us to find comfort even in the blitzkrieg of everyday living. That's the challenge for me. Is not to get so busy that I don't take the time and put forth the energy to find the instruction. I would invite you to take a hymnal and turn to hymn number 665. O Master, let me walk with Thee. As we sing, our altar is open for any decision that anyone might make, even if it's that recommitment, because you're feeling blitzed. The way to overcome it is to find various ways to truly walk with God, to live that life. Hymn number 665, O Master, let me walk with Thee.